Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Veterans Radio Podcast. Cyrus Raymond here from the Legal Help for Veterans Studio in Northville, Michigan. Just want to thank you for clicking on the download button on today's show. And also would like to thank podbros.com for having this podcast on their website. Head to their page and check out many other great podcasts. Until then, let's take it back to Jim Fossone right here on the Veterans Radio Podcast.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome. This is Jim Fossone for VeteransRadio.net, broadcasting from the Legal Help for Veterans Studio in Northville, Michigan. Enjoy our Veterans Radio interview with Lisa Lark, author of There and Back.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio. Our first guest this afternoon is Lisa Lark. Lisa, say hello to the Veterans Radio audience.
Hello, everyone. How are you tonight, Jim?
We're great. We're glad to have you on. It's really been looking forward to talking to you about your current book, There and Back, The Vietnam War Through the Eyes of Those Who Lived It. Lisa, this is hot off the press, isn't it?
Yes, it's been about 3 weeks now, I think, since we have it shipping out to customers. But it's been about 2.5 years in the making, I would say.
Well, that's where we wanted to start, is go back 2.5 years. What was the original motivation for this, and what was your original interest in putting it together?
Well, this book kind of came out of my first book, All They Left Behind, which was the book for the 30th anniversary of the wall in Washington, D.C. And once we finished that project, I had so many amazing photographs, and so many Vietnam vets and their families were willing to share their stories and their letters and their photographs with me. There was so much more material that people needed to see, and this book kind of came directly out of that material that I had.
Well, let's back up then to 2012, All They Left Behind, Legacies of the Men and Women on the Wall, published by MT Publishing Company of Evansville, Indiana. Tell us about the motivation for putting All They Left Behind together.
Well, that came from the desire of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund to get a photo for every name that was on the wall. That's their ongoing Wall of Faces campaign. And I started working with them in about 2011 to begin locating the photos for the men from Dearborn, Michigan, which is my hometown where I grew up and where I was a longtime high school teacher. And from that, we started working on Michigan, and then we started working on a more national level, and the stories that told the lives of these men and women just desperately need to be told, because 50 years from now, 100 years from now, when the people who knew these men and women, these names on the wall, when they're gone, the stories still need to be told. People need to know that this is just more than names on a wall.
And Lisa, I think you and I bumped into each other probably while you were still looking for some of the photos for the first book, All They Left Behind. Talk a little bit about the process of trying to find the photos you needed and the stories you needed to tell those individual stories of men and women who had died during that war.
Well, for the book itself, for All They Left Behind, one thing that was critically important to us was we paint as broad a picture as we could. We wanted to stay away from it was just officers, or it was just enlistees, or it was just draftees, and it was just this or just that. We really wanted to make sure we captured a little bit of everyone who fought and died in this war. And so we started out looking make sure that we hit all five branches of service, because in a lot of the materials, the Coast Guard is just completely overlooked. In a lot of the materials, you don't get the first-person recollections from family members and from veterans. And as I had been a teacher, I know that's what students of this next generation remember. They remember the first-person stories. They remember the photographs. They remember the faces that look like them. And so it was critical that we find as many different types of people from as many different types of places as we could. You know, and in All They Left Behind, we had photographs of men who had been in Vietnam for less than a day, and we had men who won the Medal of Honor. So we really tried to cover everything that we could possibly get.
Lisa, you've mentioned that you were a high school teacher. You have a bachelor's and a master's in education, I believe, from the University of Michigan, Dearborn. What brought you to the project to begin with? The military family, a lost member of the family? How did that first bring, how did this become your passion?
Well, my father is a Vietnam-era Marine. He was in the United States Marine Corps from 1966 to 1969. So my younger brother and I were always raised to respect the military, to honor the military. We were very active in the city of Dearborn's Memorial Day Parade. My dad's been driving the Grand Marshal since I was probably 14 years old. And when I started teaching high school, I was teaching at Edsel Ford High School, which is where I was a student, ironically. And Edsel Ford has a wonderful Memorial Day ceremony where they read the names of the 23 men from Edsel Ford who died. And after that ceremony, one of my students started asking me some questions about a young man. He had recognized the name. Dearborn is still a relatively small town, and there was a current high school student with that name. And he wanted to know a little bit more, and I had no answers. And as a teacher, anytime your student is inquisitive about absolutely anything, you help them find the answers. And so it sort of grew from that.
And, in fact, part of what's in All They Left Behind is an essay that I believe you wrote regarding the, I think there were 57 men from Dearborn who lost their life in Vietnam.
Yes. And that doesn't include non-in-country casualties, so lives that were lost in training or an accident. That brings the total up to 69.
And that would have been a pretty significant number of deaths arising out of the city of Dearborn during that war, wouldn't it have been?
Yes, it was absolutely all-encompassing for the city. And it was just an interesting perspective because, you know, teaching high school at the time, these were my boys. They were that age. They were walking right out of Edsel or Dearborn or Fortson in June or January, and in many cases, walking right into the military. And being, you know, losing their lives within a year, within 2 years. And it was just very tragic. And it really brought it home, I think, for myself and my students in a way that none of us expected.
Well, certainly what you've written has become, at least I would think it's become, a very good teaching tool for families to pass on to children, for educators to use with their classrooms. Was that a little bit of what you were trying to accomplish?
I guess in a sense, because that's my background, that came out a lot more than I intended it to. Because as I said, when you have a student who has no point of reference for Vietnam, and as I said myself, it's my father and his generation that fought this war and that waited on the home front for it. And one of the young men featured in All They Left Behind, Lance Corporal Charles Meek, was a classmate of my mom's from grade school all the way through high school. Those first-person generational, you're going to have those gaps. You know, in my generation, I was born right before we left Vietnam in 1975. And as my children and my grandchildren get older, these are the stories that are going to resonate. You know, not necessarily in a textbook where you see one paragraph about Tet or about the fall of Saigon. That's not going to resonate as much as a photograph would or as a letter from someone who was there.
When you turned to the material that you had developed and started thinking about putting There and Back together, mm-hmm. what were you trying to accomplish differently in your second book as compared to your first?
Well, in There and Back, one of the things that I really wanted to accomplish is to give these men and women who were there and who did wait on the home front and who did sit in front of their TVs to wait for the draft lottery numbers, I wanted those stories to come out. And one of the things you'll notice about the difference between the two books is that All They Left Behind is very text-heavy. Those are my words, my writing, and just a few photos here and there. There and Back is far more photo-based and far less text, I should say, that I wrote myself. It's very quote-heavy. The words come from the men and women who were there. The photos were all donated to me and allowed me to use them by veterans and veterans' families. And they wrote most of the captions, and they all filled out surveys for me and explained what was happening in the photos. And so the majority of the words are theirs. And that's really what I wanted to bring to light.
One of the things I've just got to pass along to the listeners is that this this book, your second book, There and Back, the Vietnam War Through the Eyes of Those Who Lived It, is a beautifully published book. The photos, whether they be in black and white or in color, are great. Everyone makes you want to stop and read the caption and talk about either, you know, a particular guy or a particular thing that they're doing. You really did a great job of getting a wide selection of photos that when I was going through this, I thought, these are their personal photos nobody's ever seen before.
Absolutely. And that was my goal. And I had a lot of people send me cruise books from men and women in the Navy. I had a lot of people send me newspapers, you know, the Army papers and stuff that would be distributed. And I said, thank you very much, but that's not what I want. I don't want professional photos. I want what you took with your camera and sent home to your families. And a lot of these, just like you said, not only have they never been seen by the public, some of these had never been seen by their own families. Because, and this is one of the sadder things for me, is that a lot of these veterans felt like no one would want to see them. Why is that interesting to anyone? You know, this is just what I did. It's just my life. And for someone that's a generation removed like myself, this is fascinating. This is a level of the war that I have never, ever seen. And I'm just, you know, upset that I couldn't use every photo that I had.
Folks, I would tell you to pick up this book. If you've got a grandfather or father or uncle who was in Vietnam, or you want to educate your children about what that was like, because you'll go through this, and at every photo there'll be something to look at, and you'll end up leaving it going, well, I didn't know that. And there's humor in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
There is a picture on page 48 where somebody painted on a 500-pound bomb. It's not the gift, it's the thought behind it. So I suspect that you received a fair number of those kind of photos where you found humor in places you might not think it would be.
Well, by far the best part for me has been meeting these men and women and talking to them and hearing their stories, because you know, they'll start to talk to me and they'll say, oh, well, you know, you're a historian, you're a professor, you probably don't care about that. And I have to stop them in their tracks and say, no, that's what I want. There's plenty of books written by generals, written by political scientists, written by, you know, higher-ups, historians, academics, and things like that. Not that those aren't great books, but I want to talk to you. You know, you are the ones who were there, who were, you know, sleeping on wet ground for 6 months, and something that might be an afterthought to you is something that's going to absolutely, you know, blow people's minds and just look at it and go, like you said, I didn't know that people did that. I didn't know, you know, and even the simple things like how they showered, you know, and using that term very, very loosely because it's probably just a bucket of rain, but, you know, how did they keep clean? Where did the food come from when you're in the field for that long? And those were things that, having been a teacher and having not been alive during the war, I could look at it and I'd have conversations with my students. Like, if you could ask someone who was in Vietnam the most random question you could think of, what would you ask them? And then that's what guided me a lot of the way, is that, you know, the battles have been described by outsiders or by higher-ups so many times. I wanted to see what it was like from just, you know, regular Johnny from St. Louis or from Los Angeles or from Austin.
Absolutely. You didn't approach this as, I'm going to tell the story of the Vietnam War.
Absolutely not. I have no interest in telling any political information about it at all. And one of the things that people will notice when they read either one of my books, I don't talk about winning and losing, about right or wrong, about who did this and who didn't do this. This is about the men and women who were there.
So you broke this book up into three parts, which I think sort of tells the story. Maybe you can tell our listeners how those three parts are broken out.
Well, basically what I wanted to do when I started this process is tell the story from the moment that someone would enter the military, whether that be through the draft, whether that be through enlistment, officer, what have you. I wanted to tell it from that moment of entering the military from civilian life, and taking you all the way back to where you are today and what led you to the military, what experiences you had while you were in the military, whether or not you went to Vietnam, because those are valuable experiences as well. You know, the Vietnam War was not only fought in Southeast Asia, there were millions of other people contributing as well, and I don't personally believe that their contributions should be overlooked. And so we talk about people who trained and didn't go overseas. We talk about people who maybe enlisted because they felt they had to, because of maybe a judge had told them it's this or nothing. And I broke it into getting there, being there, and coming home. I felt that those were the three most natural breaks within the story, how you got to Vietnam, what you did when you were there, and what you did when you came home, and how you dealt with your experiences. And so within that, we broke each one of those three parts up a little bit, but that was sort of the most natural break for it.
Well, I want to talk about two subparts of getting through.
Okay.
That, again, this sort of, I think, helps paint the picture. This isn't your typical book. And one would be hygiene and the other communicating with home.
Okay.
Would you talk about why you did both of those?
Well, when I started looking at the life in Vietnam aspect, you know, I had, I think, more than, I want to say something like 275 contributors, and that is everyone from people who filled out a long survey for me to people who just sent me an email in passing like, hey, I've got this one photo. I don't want to do this survey because it seems ridiculous and why would you care, but I'm going to tell you this one photo with this one story. And so I counted everybody that gave me information as a contributor. And when I kept coming through the stories, as you said earlier, Jim, I did want to inject a little bit of humor because for these men and women, they kept coming back to that. Those were the stories that they continued to tell me, you know, about the time that someone was walking in the mud and both of their boots came off and they fell on their face. Or about the time that, you know, this soldier that they had lost in combat used to always sing in the shower, and that's what they remembered. And so when I would look over these surveys, I would see these very lighter moments and these very personal moments and these very touching moments, and I knew that I had to do something with them. And once the photos started coming in, the hygiene photos were probably one of the ones that I received the most of. And as someone who has studied the war but not necessarily looked at that particular element of it, I had no idea of the strange and unusual and ingenious ways that you know, these men and women met their needs for hygiene and, you know, shaving on the backs of pans and, you know, using gas cans as shower heads and all these different things. And for me, I think there's a lot of camaraderie in the hygiene photos that really makes them really touching.
Well, I think they, you do a great job capturing the sort of day-to-day life of getting through. There's a photo of a clear spring day in 1970 where laundry's drying in the sun,
mm-hmm,
at the 91st Evacuation Hospital.
With the sunset?
Facing the South China Sea with the sunset.
It's gorgeous.
Could be in the Chamber of Commerce magazine.
And these are photos that, as you said, have been sitting in people's, on their hard drives and in their basements for 30, 40, 50 years. And
let's talk about communicating with home, because, mm-hmm, I think our Iraq and Afghanistan veterans maybe don't fully appreciate the challenges of communicating with home back during the Vietnam War, and I think your book captures that.
That one actually grew out of the main photo on the page where Stanley Herzog's mother and grandmother are sitting in front of the reel-to-reel tape player and sending messages to him. And I actually knew I had to have that photo in the book. And it's such a simple, you know, to describe it to your listeners, it's just a simple black-and-white photo of two women at a kitchen table in front of a reel-to-reel tape looking at photos. And what they would do is that when Stanley was in Vietnam, he would take a roll of photos and send it home to his parents along with a reel-to-reel of his diary of the war. And they would develop the photos and listen to his messages and then record their own message and send it back. And there's just such a sweetness to this photo that, you know, is not something that you expect to see. And as you said, for veterans in Iraq and Afghanistan, you're using Skype, you're using, you know, instant message, you're using Instagram, you're using Facebook, and you have the ability to communicate, obviously not as much as you would like, but on a far more regular basis. And, you know, the way that we communicated with our loved ones in Vietnam or even overseas was so random. and the scheduling was so difficult. And sometimes you'd get 12 letters at once in 1 week, and then sometimes you'd get, you know, three every other day, and there was just no way to tell. And you just did the best you could with what you had, and I think that, that photo captures it. And along with the other favorite part of that is the Sea Rat postcard.
Yes.
That's on page 75. It's just communicating by any means necessary and getting your messages out to your loved ones.
So somebody took their MRE box turkey loaf, converted it into a postcard and sent it to their probably spouse or mother, and somehow it ended up in your hands and you were able to get a photograph of it and put it in the book. It again, that's one of those ones that sort of made you smile when you turned the page and you didn't expect it.
And that's what I got, and that's kind of how I built the book, was that I had these great words and these great surveys, but I tried to build it around the photos. Is what is this story that 50 years from now somebody's going to pick up this book at, you know, the Plymouth Library or the, you know, Edsel Ford High School Library. They're going to pick it up and they're going to flip through it and they're going to see this, you know, smiling young man making his tape to send home, or, you know, a group of guys eating hot dogs.
I actually, again, want to tell our listeners that if you've got somebody in the family, maybe they haven't told their stories before, grab a copy of this book, sit down with them, and as you go page by page, I am positive that they will open up and start telling stories about, yeah, I was there, I saw something like that, or, yeah, that's how we had to deal with getting shaved or getting cleaned or getting food or communicating. And I think that's going to be the lasting value of the book, Lisa. I hope that's what you wanted.
That's absolutely what I wanted. I mean, you know, one of the things when I go to different veterans groups, and I've been very lucky to meet a couple different groups that have asked me to come and speak to them, and one of the things I talk about is that, you know, I'm trying to share these memories. I'm trying to pass along these stories so that when you're gone, your friends aren't going to be forgotten.
Lisa, we're running out of time on the first part of the hour here. We'll hit a hard break, but tell our listeners how they reach you. Maybe tell us what's next for you as well.
Well, right now I'm looking at finishing up all of the photographs for the state of Michigan. We're particularly focused on the city of Detroit. The city of Detroit does not have a lot of photos represented on the Wall of Faces, so I'm definitely eager to hear from anyone who knew someone that lost their lives in Vietnam. And you can get a hold of me if you Google my name or go to the Facebook page for There and Back, and I'll be glad to talk to any of your listeners at any time.
Well, again, we really appreciate you coming on. You did a fantastic job at both of these books. They're published by MT Publishing Company out of Evansville, Indiana. And you can find Lisa very easy by Googling her name. Lisa, thank you very much for joining us on Veterans Radio, and keep up the excellent work.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it, and I'd like to thank all your veteran listeners for their service to their country and wish you all a happy new year.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.